Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. But I'm happy today. I was on house arrest for 90 days illegally. The only person in the history of mankind who went to the appeal court and won his case, and the judge refused to take the tether off, refused to acknowledge the court of appeal decision. It even went further. The Supreme Court issued a decision. The judge refused also hear that order. But I'm telling you today, I'm happy today. I'm happy today because I'm free. Free at last. Free at last. Thank Almighty God I'm free at last. And I have my dear brother, Larry Pinckney, on the line, a true soldier, a true warrior, a person who I love very, very much. I know when I was incarcerated, he went beyond the call of duty to help support me and help get me released. Now, that's a brother, you see, and I'm proud of him today. I'm happy that he's with us. He's my co-host. He's my brother. He's everything you can think of. He's mine, though. You can't have him. Larry, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, brother, all I can say is that I'm a fighter, and I believe that the struggle continues. I believe, and I'm very happy to have come from a background of struggle, including in the Black Panther Party, and which was really where I was home and taught discipline, among other things, and come from a long line of fighters, my brother. So everything you said is right back at you, my brother. And you know we have somebody real special, but I'm going to let you do the introduction on that.
Well, let me do the introduction on him also. But before I get to him, I want people to know how I feel about you and also the hard work that you've been doing. Because a lot of people may not understand exactly. See, they always think of Reverend Pinckney, but there's a Larry Pinckney. There's a Larry Pinckney in this world who's even more of a warrior than Reverend Pinckney. So that's how you look at that. So that's how, see, when somebody mention my name, they got to mention your name also, Larry.
Well, thank you, you know how I am.
And you know I'm telling the truth because it's from my heart. But anyway, let's get to our guest. I don't know a whole lot about him, but Larry, why don't you introduce him?
I would love to.
Yes.
Our guest today is a comrade, brother, who has for many, many years been engaged in the struggle, in the people's struggle, and his name is Billy X. Jennings.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Billy also is a former active member of the Black Panther Party, which originally started out as the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense and then became the Black Panther Party. But beyond that, Brother Jennings, I'm sure he will tell you a lot about his background in the course of talking about the history, since this month of October is Black Panther Party History Month. But Brother Jennings, BJ, is one. This, I hope I'm not going to get taken off the radio, but he is one hell of a brother. Mm. He's what I call a brother's brother. He specifically is the curator and the historian. I repeat, the curator and the historian of the website, It's About Time. That's the name of the website, It's About Time, Black Panther Party, Legacy and Alumni. And he is the most fantastic historian, particularly when it comes to anything relating to the struggle of our brothers and sisters in the Black Panther Party and beyond, for that matter. And I am just thrilled to have Brother Billy with us as our guest. I'm sure, as I said, he will tell you more. I can tell you that he worked very diligently with the Black Panther Party newspaper in getting it out, et cetera, et cetera. And that was a very important organ, a news organ. But he's done so many things, and I feel, quite frankly, inadequate to even begin to say it all. Brother Billy, good to have you, bro.
Thank you very much.
Well, Billy, before you cut in,
much for those high praises.
Yeah,
thank
but
you
Billy,
very much.
Yeah. I know Larry. He speaks so highly of you, and I tell you. See, if you're a brother of Larry, then you're my brother too.
Fantastic.
You see, in that way, it can't be no other way, because I know that Larry speaks so highly of you, and I tell you, this is one of these moments, you know, where I got me two Black Panther Party members on the phone at the same identical time.
Yeah, but at the same time, I've known about your work for many, many years. I mean, I got some reporter papers go back to 1972, 73 with you on the front page.
Well, that you know what? That is true. Matter of fact,
You're not unknown.
Yeah, I was on the front page back in them days, too.
That's right.
But, you know, I don't know whether it was good or bad, you know, because sometimes they always say, well, that guy is always into something.
Well, but, you know, they always say those bad, they always say those things about people who try to raise people awareness and bring people together. And at the time that I'm talking about, you were a very necessary force.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. You hit the nail right on the head. I never talk about them days, but those good days also.
Oh, yeah, it's part of our history.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, Billy, tell us a little bit about you. And so they know more about you, because, see, you're our guest today, and we want the people to know all about Billy J, or BJ, as Larry call you.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you a very short little bio about myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Alabama in 1950. I grew up in Anniston, Alabama. We all know what happened in Anniston with the Freedom Riders.
Absolutely.
That kind of attitude prevailed there, you know. So I knew what racism was early in life. My father was in the service, and he was transferred to California in 1955, just when the bus boycott was kicking off in Montgomery. And we ended up in San Diego. And he stayed in the service, but how I became aware was through my mother. My mother, at that time, we bought a TV in 1955, which was not a common thing. TV was not, everybody didn't have it at that particular time. But we got it so we can keep up what was going on in Alabama. And through us viewing what was going on with the civil rights struggle in Alabama, it developed that my mother had a very militant attitude. She didn't believe in turning the other cheek and things
All right.
like that. And so the things that I've seen on TV, she would turn around and say to me face to face, "Hey, boy, don't you ever let anybody do that kind of stuff to you." So I kind of grew up with that type of attitude until maybe 1967. I met this guy who went on to become an Olympic star, Tommy Smith.
I know him quite well.
He and I went to the same high school together. Although he was much ahead of me, he was my PE teacher when I was in eighth grade.
Mm.
And on a military base, I would get into fights very often. And so he would give me words of advice like, choose your own battles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have to choose your battles. You can't fight everybody, that kind of thing. And I kind of took that to heart. And, you know, later on, you know, he did the same thing. You know, he picked a time in 1968 Olympics and stood up, put his fist up and let everybody know he was for unity in the community. So with that same type of attitude, when I graduated in 1968, I moved to Oakland, California.
Okay.
And went to Laney College during the summer in 1968. And during that, when I was going to summer school, a huge trial started at the Alameda County Courthouse, which
mm-hmm.
was like a few blocks from Laney College at that time. And you could hear the Panthers saying, "Free Huey, Free Huey," you know, all the way on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, when I graduated from high school, my English teacher gave me a book called The Autobiography of Malcolm X.
Okay.
1968, and I was reading that book when I was going to the rallies. And I would hear Elders Cleaver and Bobby Seale talk about the same thing that Malcolm was talking about. And so I got interested in the party. In 1968, I joined, and we joined the East Oakland chapter of the Black Panther Party under Robert Bay.
Okay.
And I worked out there for a few years, and then I got transferred to Central Headquarters. And when Huey got out of jail in 1970, the Central Committee put me and a few other brothers in charge of his personal security. And I worked with Huey for maybe a year or so. worked with his family. And then around 1972, when Bobby Seale ran for mayor of Oakland,
Yours there?
Yep. Mine
there too.
Yeah,
so,
are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there?
Okay, I'm here. I'm here. Go ahead, my brother.
Yeah. So every in 1995, I had moved away. In 1988, I had moved to New York and moved back to California in 1995 to Sacramento, California. And when I moved here, there was a lot of Panthers here that had moved from Oakland to Sacramento, and so. At that time, somebody brought up the fact that our anniversary, our 30th anniversary was coming around. And so we organized a small committee out of Sacramento with Panthers down in Oakland, and we had our first major event, which was called the 30th anniversary reunion of the Black Panther Party down at the Jack London Square.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very successful. About 400 party members came together, and the unity was so strong that people didn't want to let that energy goes, so we stayed together as an organization called It's About Time. And I became the editor of the newspaper, and I helped launch the website It's About Time, BPP.com,
mm-hmm.
which has over 1.5 million hits in terms of people coming to the website for information. So our organization continues to bring out the legacy, educate people about the Black Panther Party, and also about political prisoners of the Black Panther Party and of the struggle, because there's many brothers and sisters who are in jail or have been in prison because of COINTELPRO and other activities by the government. So our legacy continues, and we continue to educate people about the struggle and about political prisoners and about activities in the community to help them take control of their community.
Wow.
So those are some of the things I've been working for.
Well, that's tremendous. I tell you, that's see if I was I'll give you a big handshake and a big hug right now, because I tell you that is outstanding. I know Larry. There's something that you want to ask him.
Yeah, actually, there's something I want to ask him as well. As first, I want to preface my question.
Uh-huh.
When Brother Billy was talking about Huey's trial.
Uh-huh.
He was talking about Huey P. Newton,
okay.
And I wanna emphasize that Brother Billy knew Huey. I also knew Huey, but Brother Huey, Brother Billy, among other things, provided security for
mm-hmm.
Brother Huey. And while I deeply respect and appreciate Brother Billy's humility, let me just say that this brother, you know, there's an African saying that says, much silence makes a mighty noise.
Absolutely.
And that essentially sums my comrade brother up.
Mm-hmm.
He says, he doesn't say that much,
mm-hmm.
but if you see what he does, if you see his work, he referred to the It's About Time website, www.itsabouttime.com. Go on it. Check it out. As
mm-hmm.
he said, there are lots of hits. 1.5 million, did you say, Billy?
Yeah.
And we continue
to put information on that on a regular basis. We have something like over maybe 40, 45 different videos, maybe some full length 2-hour videos on the struggle, you know, hard to find videos, hard to find information. We find it and put it on our website, because one of the things we learned in the Black Panther Party early on was information is the raw material for new ideas.
You know, I know that. You know, I know
so
that.
Young people looking for answers, that I tell them you have to look into the past and see how people your age back then dealt with the problem and see how you can deal with it today. But you have to provide a link for them. So as young people are into videos and not like our generation that were into books, we have to provide that link for them to see a video about the Black Panther Party, for them to get an idea of what we were going through at the time, so they could see what the history was, because the education system is not today is not teaching them about struggle, least
Absolutely.
Of all organizations like the Black Panther Party.
And
so we have
to
provide
Billy, let me say this.
Yeah.
Billy, you know, another thing that the school system is not teaching them about our history at all. And I feel that the Black Panther Party is part of my history also, because I know that when Mark Hampton and Mark Clark, when Fred Hampton and Mark Clark was murdered in Chicago, I mean, it got me and all my brothers all excited, and we walk around like, you know, we were ready to do something.
Yeah.
And I always respected the Black Panther Party because the way y'all handled yourself. You well disciplined, and I love y'all. I mean, to be on the phone with two, not just one, but two Black Panther Party members is too exciting to me.
You know, see the history of the party in each city is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a lot of people because we do have a website and it's very popular. They always want to know information about the Oakland Panthers, but I tell them, go to our menu on our website, and it says chapter history. I've started breaking Black Panther Party offices down city by city so that young people who call me from Cleveland can find out about elders who are in their community who stood up and made a statement and tried to make a difference in their community. They don't have to just look to Oakland for it. There's heroes in their own community that they can look to. And I try to provide that information, that link to them, so they can look into their history on a local level.
And one of the things, if I can just interject real quick, one of the things that Comrade Brother Billy always does, and I have enormous respect for this, he puts information out about the struggles of rank and file. I emphasize rank and file members, brothers and sisters, sisters and brothers in the party. You dig?
Uh-huh.
And He, you know, a number of people have heard and think they know about, or might even know about, say, Brother Huey P. Newton, or Brother Bobby, or Brother David Hilliard, or even Sister Kathleen Cleaver. But the bottom line is that Brother Billy has on the website stories of not only those brothers and sisters, but especially of the rank and file who made the party possible, who made it viable, I should say.
Wow.
Well, you know, it takes another step. One of the things I started doing is defining chapters and branches of the Black Panther Party that have not received their due credit. For instance, the San Francisco chapter of the Black Panther Party has been overshadowed by the national headquarters that was in Oakland for many years. And many people don't know that the Black Panther Party newspaper was printed in Oakland, and a brother named Sam Napier was the circulation manager of the paper. He grew that paper from a 20,000 circulation to over 300,000-400,000 Panther Papers a week operation. Also, the San Francisco chapter of the Black Panther Party is accredited with working with different organizations like the BSU at San Francisco State College and at the San Francisco City University at different universities to help develop Black studies and Black history classes on different campuses. So when you look into our website, we have those links to not only the Black Panther Party offices, but to the BSUs and the community organizations that participated and helped the Black Panther Party form a united front to fight.
Absolutely.
Because you just can't talk about the party and the entity by itself. We were talking about the community behind the party.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Right. And I want to ask Billy. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
I just want to ask him about that 10-point program.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I want to let the public know. See, I know all the wonderful things that you know that the Black Panther Party have done, but there's a lot of people listening don't know. So please let's start with that 10-point program.
Okay, let me tell you a little story. I was talking to Bobby Seale just last week, and Bobby and we were talking about the 10-point program.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so the 10-point program was put together before the Black Panther Party was put together as with a name.
Mm-hmm.
So Huey and Bobby had been working on this, and they came up with the 10 things they thought black people would need to free themselves or call themselves liberated, and the things that we wanted to work for to establish. So they came up with the 10-point program, and I'm going to go over part of that with you. The number one thing was, the very first point was, we want freedom, we want power to determine the destiny of our community. We want, in other words, if young people, we're talking to young people today, we would say that we want the power to empower ourselves in our community. You know, just play on words, but at the same time, this is what we were talking about, to control the institutions in our community, because we feel that until we do that, we won't truly be free. Number two would be that we want full employment for our people. Mm-hmm. We believe that the federal government and other responsible businessmen has a responsibility to make sure that the people in the community have a decent wage and an opportunity for advancement. Number three is, we want to end to the robbery of the capitalists of our black community. This is just saying, originally, when it first was written, it said we want to end the robbery of the white man from our community.
Okay.
We changed that with our analysis. As the party grew with knowledge, we understood that the black community was exploited not by just white people, but blacks and other people too, and also it shows that the party grew from a nationalist viewpoint to a class struggle viewpoint, because we were not the only ones oppressed in the world. So number four is that we want decent housing fit for the shelter of human beings. That speaks for itself. Number five, we want education for our people that exposes the true nature of this decadent American society. We want education that teaches us our true history and our role in present-day society. And this is where the academic world and different ethnic groups came together to change that and forge something like on San Francisco State College and at UC Berkeley, establish an ethnic studies department so they could teach decent education or at least teach black history. Prior to that time, prior to 1968, black people know very little about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So number six is that we want all black men exempt from military service. Now, we later changed that particular demand, because the war was over, and we asked for medical care for everyone. And this was back in 72, we were asking for free medical care for people. But number six stood by because of black people. We were sent to fight for Vietnam against people who were fighting their own liberation. Black people couldn't even vote here to 1965 until President Johnson signed the Voting Rights Bill, and it took a little time after that for that to happen.
Absolutely.
So, yes. So at the same time, we have black people who go and fight for a country calling themselves for democracy, and you got to remember, black people would still get lynched in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
They still get lynched. So you can go fight in the service and come back and possibly be lynched or shot. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, so we wanted to end it, you know, because that wasn't a fair thing. So number seven was what the party really kind of grew up about, and a lot of people, what the big demand, that we wanted an immediate end to the police brutality and murder of black people. Now, even though I just read six other demands, this was the first one the party acted on because of what the police brutality that was going on from Hunters Point to East Oakland, from Richmond over to Moran. It was deadly murder every weekend for a black man or black woman. Okay, and I'm going to move on. Number eight is that we want all black men held in state, federal jails and prisons free, because at that time they wouldn't be tried by a jury or their peers. Because you remember, in order to be on a jury, you have to be in the voting rolls. And at that time, black people was not registered to vote because they couldn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
So that was number eight. Number nine was that we want all black men and women, when they came to trial, to be tried by a jury of their peers. And number 10 summed it all up and said, we want land, bread, housing, education, justice, and as our major political objective, a supervised public site to be held throughout the black colony in which only black colonial subjects would be allowed to participate, for the purpose of determining the will of black people and their national destiny. Now, this is something that Malcolm talked about at having a United Nations public site, so that black people can decide if we want to stay in this country, leave this country, or do whatever. But that never happened, but we always pushed for that. So that was number 10, summing it all up.
Oh, that's
And if I can just again interject,
mm-hmm.
to you know, Reverend Pinckney,
yes.
The very point that Comrade Brother Billy was talking about with respect to the 10-point program, particularly the last three, that also specifically deal with issues from police brutality to voting rights, affect you directly with the apartheid situation that you're dealing with in Benton Harbor. You and the black community collectively are dealing with in Benton Harbor. So the struggle is definitely continuing. And what's so powerful about the 10-point program, that's why I'm so delighted that you asked Brother Billy about it, is that the 10-point program in so many respects, indeed in most of them, is still extremely relevant today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what the work that y'all did was so tremendous, it affects us today.
Oh,
I
yes,
mean, and Brother Billy and Larry, mm-hmm. I'm excited. I'm excited to be here with y'all. And, you know, and I want us to continue to be this way because you're giving me an education that, you know, that I would cherish for the rest of my life. Just being on, just having my brother Larry here and Brother Billy, this is really tremendous. But here's something I wanted to tell you. I used to live in Oakland for a couple of years. Yeah. And about when you talk about Langley College and things like that, that hits me right in the heart because I was there. But I always think about, you know, the Black Panther Party from Oakland, not from San Francisco. And you are absolutely correct.
Oh yeah, yeah. But you know they're like I just recently went to a concert of a longtime entertainer that was a big idol of mine, Gil Scott-Heron,
mm-hmm.
finally made his way to San Francisco about 2 weeks ago. And I went there. It was like a going-home reunion, like a class reunion. It was some comrades I ain't seen since I used to go to the Berklee Jazz Festival back in the early 70s and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen a lot. And it was such a warm reunion of seeing comrades again and people who love the same type of music. And it was good seeing Gil because he kind of explained what was going on in his life, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So he was out there a couple of weeks ago, Billy.
Yeah, he was out in the Bay Area, and he talked about, you know, different organizations and movements that you know, he really admired, and he talked about the party, he talked about Fannie Lou Hamer, and he talked about you know, the civil rights movement, and he talked about you know, the fight for South Africa, you know, to divest in the 80s and stuff like that, and freedom from Mandela. And it was good because he had made songs around those particular issues, you know.
He sure did.
And I was also telling young people, I just had an exhibit on Thursday at the main library in Oakland. It was called Women of the Black Panther Party and Beyond. And one of the pictures I had exhibited was a young picture of a young lady named Kalita Smith. And she played Bernie Mac's wife on TV on the Bernie Mac show. And in the same photo, I had in the same exhibit, I showed a picture of Afeni Shakur with Tupac. And Tupac at that time was maybe eight months old,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just seeing people that our legacy still could, you know, continues to grow in development. Because a lot of people don't know that young people like, young brothers like Kanye West.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Panther Cub.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his parents was in the Black Panther Party.
Wow,
born
I didn't even
out
know
that. Struggle. Yeah, there's a lot of young people, our youth, who are doing great things and people don't know who
mm-hmm.
they are. But, you know, as a historian, I know these things.
Absolutely.
You know?
Here's
so
something,
I try to make the connection because that's how you draw young people into what you're about because not all of them are really into history,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right. Right,
so you
right.
you can make the connection with present day idols or images, and you, and the like Boots. There's a group out of Oakland called Boots in the Coup. He's
mm-hmm.
a progressive revolutionary hip hop guy, and his brothers like M1 or Dead Prez, and they, you know, they talk about the party in a positive manner, and even Mos Def.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a strong Black Panther Party supporter and stuff like that. And it comes out through his music. And through his music, I can take his music, put it on our website. Young people will find it and make the connection to the rest of the information. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, because this is the things they're talking about, like young Fred Hampton Jr.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's out in the community trying to educate people about the struggle.
So oh, absolutely.
We have different, you know, when we was out there, it was mostly a young people's thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
most party members were like from 17 years old to maybe 24,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
from high school to college age. I mean, we had some older brothers in there, like elders. He was like 33 or something like that. That was old.
Elder was the old man. He was the old man.
Yeah. Elder was old, and Bobby was 31.
Uh-huh.
You know, and there were Big Man Howard. He was in his 30s. You know, but most of the Wreck and Fire Party members, we were just out of high school, and we was college people, you know. And college
right.
age is anywhere from 17 to 21 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had some brothers that, a lot of brothers who had came from Vietnam. You know, had
mm-hmm.
been drafted. They had to do those 2-year skits, and that's how a lot of them got political educated. They came back with attitude.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, talk a little bit about that, the breakfast program, that, you know, because I know that the Black Panther Party was very instrumental when it came to that breakfast program, because that's the same program that they instituted later on here. The government instituted that program later on only because of the Black Panther Party.
Well,
go ahead, Billy.
That wasn't the only program, but I'm going to give you that. For example, I worked on that program, the very, very first breakfast program at 27th and West over at St. Augustine Church on the Father Neil. Now, that was a program brought together. Black Panther Party brought education and nutrition together. We were the first ones to do that. We were the first ones to understand that in our community, for young people to get an education, they have to have that concentration. You know, they have to go there with their mind on what they have to do instead of on the next meal or I'm hungry right now. So we can take that out the equation. They will, you know, have a more potential to learn. You know, they won't distract from their education. So we established this program in the winter of 1968, and it really started off really in 1969. And we started out with that one example, and it spread throughout the country. You got to remember, the Black Panther Party had 48 different chapters and branches at that particular time, and we started it up. Other chapters and branches started up throughout different cities. And it wasn't just in Oakland we started. We had a breakfast program at Sacred Heart Church in San Francisco, over in Double Rock in San Francisco, over in Kisco Road in Hunters Point, throughout San Francisco, throughout Oakland, Richmond, Berkeley, and beyond, because in Chicago we had 5 different breakfast programs, and in New York, which we had a very large chapter in every different borough, we had numerous programs. So we started out with these programs, and of course, the main thing of the party, we emphasized education, because we believe that we were the vanguard organization, and being a vanguard, we have to set examples. So the example we wanted to set is that we can do this ourselves in our own community. So we started feeding our own kids, and people started respecting that. We started respecting the party more because we were actually doing something in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So out of this, all these breakfast programs that we ran for maybe 2 years or a year before the people in the community took them over, because you have to look at the example that we're setting. There's different PTAs all over the country are saying, hey, them Panthers in Oakland got a thing going over here. We can do that here.
Mm-hmm.
And it became, hey, PTO in Cleveland and Dayton, Ohio, throughout the country say, hey, we can do this. And it started, you know, and we embarrassed the country. Because people were saying, hey, you're talking about the Panthers are no good. They're feeding the kids. They're feeding more than the government's feeding.
So that's right.
So in 1971, the government started a free breakfast program. And according to their statistics, on their nutritional program, which this is listed, they feed something like 7.9 million kids on an annual basis. So we got to figure, like, if they are doing that, and say that's been the norm for the last 35 or 40 years since we started this particular program, I bet 0% of those millions and millions of people know that the Black Panther Party started the original original breakfast program.
Wow.
You know?
That's right.
And not only that, we went a step further. We had free medical clinics. We had 11 throughout America. We had 11 clinics where you can walk in. We didn't ask you who your mama was, who your daddy was, how much money you make. Does everybody in your family have the same last name? We would say that if you got ailments or you're hurt, come on down to the clinic. And out of those 11 clinics, two of them are open to this very day. 35 years later, still operating in communities and serving the communities. No, they're not operated by Black Panther Party members, but they've been adopted by the community, and they run, like in Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
Seattle, Washington. It's called Carol Downs Free Medical Clinic, named after the Black Panther Party sister who helped establish it. She died of breast cancer, and they renamed it after her. It's operational. Thousands of people have been there.
Wow.
So these are things that the party has implemented throughout the community. In 1971, the Black Panther Party and a different community organization put an initiative on a ballot in Berkeley called Community Control of Police. Even though this initiative did not win, it set off a ripple effect where within the next 2 years, it became an institution that came into being called police review boards. A way to review police actions that people in the community have against them. So there's not a city in America that don't have a police review board, good or bad, but they established that. And that was something that the Black Panther Party helped establish. Those are just some of the small things the party helped establish. Like voter registration, that's something that, you know, it's almost invisible. But you got to remember, during the 1972-73 election, that's what put Bobby Seale in the final runoff against mayor election, registering people to vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And right there, people seeing the example say, Jesus, we got into the runoff. Bobby almost won this thing.
Yeah.
But with the same machinery, 2 years later, Lionel Wilson ran with the support of the Black Panther Party and captured the seat a mayor of Oakland and change the dynamics in Oakland forever.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Yeah.
People like Barbara Lee, when she was a student at at Mills College, which is an all-girls college at that time, she worked in my campaign office under me. She was a campaign precinct worker who went out in the community every day to help register people and get people to vote for Bobby Seale. I've known her for a very long time, ever since she was in college. You know,
Larry, I know you got something exciting you want to ask him, don't you?
Well, I would like to be very succinct about this. Comrade Brother Billy, for the people in our audience, and particularly the young people, but really everybody, what motivated you? I mean, you did talk about prior, you did talk about your mother and how she made it clear that you needed to stand up. But what things in the Black Panther Party, once you were in the party, bro, what motivated you? What kept you going? Because, you know, we were under heavy pressure from the local, state, and federal authorities. What kept you going, Billy?
Well, you know, it was the way I was raised, you know. We're not quitters, you know. And not only that, it was – every day I woke up, I knew I was making a difference. I was feeding hundreds of kids that I don't even know. They're not my kids. I'm only 18 years old. But it makes me feel great. Because, you know, right now, I can go to a club, I can walk around Oakland, I can be what, and somebody will stop me and say, I remember you. You used to feed me and my brother the free breakfast program out there in East Oakland.
Yeah.
That makes me feel like a giant.
Yeah.
Somebody remember me after all that time? See, putting in work in the community, it's one in the Black Panther Party, that's what it was about. It was when theory met practice. We didn't talk the talk. We walked the walk. We went door to door in the community, you know. And when you hear people's pains and you see the conditions they're under, you know, I joined the Black Panther Party because I wanted to make a difference, and so did a lot of other party members. And so that's what we set out to do, come hell or high water. You know, life or death. There's other people who died before us. Our struggle was right now. Just like Frederick Douglass, his struggle was right then, and Nat Turner's and Denmark Vesey and Harriet Tubman, their struggle was then. Our struggle was now, and whatever it took, we was going to do it. If we had to die doing it, well, that's what it had to take us. We wasn't backing down because the principles are written.
Mm-hmm.
Self-defense. We have to defend ourselves.
Absolutely.
Right.
Only call.
Right.
You know what I remember? Let me say this, Brother Billy. What I remember most about the Black Panther virus, and Larry, you can key in on this. I remember y'all used to have on this black outfit, these berets, and y'all had guns, y'all had rifles.
Yes, we did.
And you know one thing? It really got my attention. See, I was born and raised in the city of Chicago, and I knew about the Black Panther Party more than anything because they did the same identical thing there. They had on their black outfits, and I got excited.
I tell you,
me and my brothers, we all got excited. And, I take my hat off to the Black Panther Party. And, well, you know, a lot of people may not understand, you made a commitment.
You made
a commitment that you was willing to die for what's right.
Well, you know,
and
the legacy continues.
Yes.
That's why we have to continue to educate people about those that fell on the way to making things available for us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a long struggle to get to where we're at today. You know, and many people have paid the price in on all type of levels. But now we're elders in the community. We are the teachers in the community. So we have to let people know about our past, you know, just like any other organization or any other group that has participated in the struggle. That's what we have to do, you know. So, you know, the people that I run across out in the Black Panther Party that was once in the party, they're still dedicated, but they it might be in different things. A lot of people don't know that in the city of Oakland, that the leader of the Red Cross, if there was ever like a big evacuation thing, just like in New Orleans, the person who's in charge of that was a Black Panther Party member.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of party members who are in elected official, just like in your town, Bob Rush.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that Obama has been a winner all his life, but Obama lost one race, and that was against Bob Rush.
Bobby Rush, that's right.
In Chicago,
absolutely, absolutely.
Obama said I was out strategized. That's right.
Yeah,
because when you in the party, the Black Panther Party taught you how to think.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It taught you how to analyze situations, and it helps me every day because I internalize and I actually believe what we were saying. I believe in internationalism,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in friendship and showing solidarity against racism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed in all the things the party believed in, and I put those into my social practice on a daily basis. So those things, how to analyze the situation and look down the road and make analysis, I learned that from the party. From people like Landon Williams, you know, people like Robert Bay, Wendell Wade, Sam Napier, you know, people like that. And I was in New York just a couple years ago, and Danny Glover was sitting at the table across from me, and I just have a photo book with me because I wanted to show Kathleen. We're all had went to Kathleen's International Film Festival in New York, and Danny Glover was like the chairperson.
Mm-hmm.
So I broke out my book and I was showing him a picture of a guy named Donald Cox, the field marshal
mm-hmm.
of the Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes the book out of my hand and he goes through the book and he starts naming every Panther he knows because he says, man, I used to go down to the Panther office and get me 100 papers every Wednesday night and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
That was Danny talking. He said,
and I believe that too. I believe that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's all the San Francisco Panthers know him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Danny was also at State.
At
San Francisco State during the strike.
That's mm-hmm. right. Him and Benny Stewart.
Mm-hmm. Benny Stewart. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And they just celebrated their 40th year just last week for
mm-hmm.
ethnic studies, 40 years since the implementation of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Those were the things that kind of that made me go forward, that the fact that I knew I was fighting the right fight, that I was fighting the right enemy, because if we were doing, you know, we have to be doing something right for the enemy to come out of us like that.
Oh, absolutely.
They came out of us like we're blazing guns.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we stood our grounds, you know.
Yes.
We took the arrest, and some people paid with their lives, but at the same time, that people knew that we would stand up for our rights, and that every time we went to court, we would beat them in court. They lost every major case there was. They lost Huey. Huey walked in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
They reversed that case. Bobby Seale walked on all his cases, the New Haven case, the Chicago 8 case, the L.A. 18 walked. They beat their case. You know, the New York 21 with Afeni Shakur, they beat their case. They lost all those cases. Erica Huggins' case in Connecticut, they lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
mm-hmm.
they all were kangaroo, trumped up charges from the start, and the people that were on the jury saw that.
Mm. Billy, let me preface it by saying this. My brother Billy, along with some other very, very active former members of the party, including Kathleen Cleaver, including Emory Douglas, an incredible, I call him an artist extraordinaire, just a number of people. Tarika Lewis, wasn't Tarika the first sister to join the party, Billy?
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
She was probably Tarika one of the most talented sisters to join the Black Panther Party.
I hear that.
Very
well, Billy,
able-bodied, talented person.
Is she still living?
Who, Tarika?
Yes.
Oh, yes, she is. I just seen her play. She plays violin, and she played at the Monterey Blues Festival just back a few months ago. She was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
She plays in the John Handy Band,
mm-hmm.
you know. So we got party members who, you know, when I was in New York for Emory Douglas' opening of his exhibit at the New Museum, Dexter Gordon's wife called me, right, the jazz musician,
mm-hmm.
and she wanted to know. She was doing some research because she was writing a book on her husband, and she wanted to know certain names that she had found in his diary, right? And because he had gave a free concert for the Panthers twice, one in Philadelphia and one in Copenhagen. And the one in Copenhagen, she wanted to know who these certain people were so she can, like, write a little bit more educated about them. So there's people who are writing books or doing documentaries, and they come to the website, you know, for verification, for information. For instance, HBO, BET, National Geographic, all those people have come and used material from our website. There's people who I refuse to give information to or are okay to use certain pictures that we have in our archives, especially there was a TV show called The View. I think the one with Barbara Walters and all
right, that group. Absolutely.
And they were on. They was going to do something called Black August, you know, a story about George Jackson. But I viewed the story they wanted to show, and it's not accurate. So they wanted to use some the actual pictures so when the actor who played George Jackson would come on, they can flash these real pictures. I told them, no, we couldn't do that because the information that they are trying to portray George Jackson with, we couldn't allow that because it's incorrect information.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what they did. So the next day, I guess they held it all together and said, well, we just buy it out. So buy them out. So this is what they said, well, we'll triple the amount that we had not originally gave you so that you can give us the pictures. I said, I don't care what amount you say. You cannot buy these pictures from me because what you're portraying is not accurate information. And George Jackson was a comrade and beloved by party members, you know, so we can't just give it to you. So, you know, I love to say no, too.
Oh, I know. I can hear it in your voice.
That's a no.
But I think that's funny.
Hey, brother Billy, and Larry,
I'm really enjoying this conversation, but I promised Mary that I was going to let her. She got to give out some information, but I don't want you to leave us, brother Billy. But I just want her. She's going to give us some information out that I failed to allow her to give that information out last week, and so I promised her I would, and before time run out. But we're still with you, Billy. We're not going to leave you for any minute. Is that okay with you, Brother Larry?
I'll hold on.
I promise I do it, so I got to be a man of my word.
Go ahead.
Mary, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I'm here, Reverend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Look, I want you to say hi to Brother Billy and Brother Larry. Now, it's nice to say hi to the Reverend, but you got to say hi to my brothers, too.
I certainly intended to do that.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Brother Larry, Brother Billy, I have so much enjoyed listening and learning more about the Black Panther Party and about it just really shows that a small group of people can effect positive change that ripples throughout a nation and throughout the world. Because what you showed is that cooperation and a sense of purpose and people dedicated and committed to working together can affect positive change that has lasting benefits for your generation as well as generations of people to come. So that is the story to my idea. That is what I've gotten from listening and enjoying hearing you and Brother Billy, but Brother Larry speak about the Panther Party. I was in a small town during the civil rights era and of course before that, and I only knew what I knew from television and from reading about the Panther Party. So it is indeed an opportunity that I've had and that I hope many people in the radio audience have had to know all of the positive things, or some of the positive things. I'm sure you could go on and on, that the Panther Party has been responsible for instituting across the nation. The free breakfast program is really, I was really delighted to know that that was the brainchild of the Panther Party. So, you know, so many people are infused with negatives, but the thing is that anything, you know, that has created such an effect, you know, generally it's positives that get a lot of negative attention. Positives get a lot of negative attention. So when you see a lot of negative attention being paid to anything, it behooves us to look at it closely and see what are they doing right. Now, that's sometimes the case, and that's the case very much with my advocacy for the incarcerated mentally ill. I get a lot of interference trying to advocate for the incarcerated mentally ill. And as we began Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill, which is an online organization that advocates for the immediate transfer of 1.25 million mentally ill citizens and other people in the country who have mental dysfunctions that have prompted them to act in such a way to be incarcerated. And, of course, not all of them had to necessarily act in such a way. They may have just been homeless and arrested for vagrancy.
Right.
But they are incarcerated. And it's an opportunity for those who own and operate the prison system, including private prison profiteers, to arrest people who are sick at the cost of $50,000 per year per person to the taxpayers. And sometimes that amount goes up to $150,000 or more. A judge recently ruled that in California, he ruled that they should build 8 new prison hospitals and equip them with people and doctors and what have you to the tune of, it would have come out to $250,000 per year per person. So that didn't happen, but that was the order. So it cost quite a great deal to house these people in prisons. And each one that they warehouse in a prison actually costs the taxpayers more than the average family of four receives in income. So it's certainly not to save money. It's to benefit prison profiteers that people are suffering. Their family members who they know are sick are arrested and become a part of this human trade, this commodity. There are commodities in the prison system, and very often they are locked away in solitary confinement instead of being in the care of doctors who have tranquilizers, who have rubber rooms for them to bounce off their energy, who have straitjackets if they're out of control. We instead have a situation where they are, one man was chained naked to a bare iron rail for 32 hours at a time. This didn't happen once. It happened repeatedly.
No clothes at all.
No clothes. They don't give them clothes because police are not in a position to determine who's suicidal and who's not.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, to be sure that they don't hang themselves or hurt themselves and bring a lawsuit against the jail or prison, they are naked in there in a cold cell, and they have no cover on their beds, either they're on iron rails. So what happened is our most vulnerable citizens are treated, if a dog was locked in a cell in his doghouse on the naked iron floor and was, shaved bare so he didn't have anything to protect him from the cold.
Wow.
We would say that was dog abuse, animal abuse, and we would, but this is what happens to our mental patients, and not just to the mentally ill incarcerated. There's quite a lot of abuse that goes on to people who are in prison in America, period. We must keep in mind that the same people, who were running the, or making rules and running the Guantanamo prisons, run the prisons here. So the thing is that the abuse to prisoners is not limited to offshore war on terror camps. It happens here,
yeah.
And there are films on YouTube that will show you life behind bars. Look at Solitary Confinement by Scott Max. Solitary confinement is a type of prison torture.
Wow.
Very often these people are locked away in cells that are 9x6, and the light is out for months at a time.
Wow.
The longest
he's married.
Yes.
We're about to run out of time. Would you give out that information that you want to get off? Because I got to let Billy have the last word.
All right, all right.
So
First of all, take
care of your business, and me and my brother, we love you when you come on, but
yes.
you got to get that information out because last
let me
week
give
we
it
missed
out.
It. Mm-hmm.
Let me give it out. Okay.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to say that anything that I could go on talking about this, but
oh,
my
I know.
Blog free. That's F-R-E-E, speak, S-P-E-A-K, blog at blogspot.com. That's free speak blog dot blogspot.com. Now, the list of concerns are, number one, death penalty. Number two, prison torture. Number three, solitary confinement. Number four, life without the possibility of parole. Number five, trying children as adults and life sentences for minors. Number six, mandatory sentencing. Number seven, three strikes laws. Number eight, the law of parties, sentencing all parties equally, regardless of the party's level of participation in crimes. Number nine, criminalizing mental illness. Number 10, relocating prisoners out of state, which restricts visits even for sick prisoners. Number 11, prison profiteering, especially by decision makers with positions in criminal justice. That's a possible conflict of interest.
Mm.
Number 12, excessive sentencing and unacceptable disparities in sentencing for similar offenses. For instance, the crack cocaine versus powder.
Right.
Number 13, enforcement of Freedom of Information Act. Number 14, prisoner health care. Number 15, increased funding for public defenders. I'll dispense with the numbers so we can go through.
Yes.
Post-conviction DNA testing. There are people who went to jail before DNA testing,
mm-hmm.
and they say they're innocent, and now they can prove it, but they won't let them take the test.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no penalty or misdemeanor charge for less than an ounce of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they're using marijuana as an excuse to arrest young people to work.
We only got 90 seconds left, and I got to get those 90 seconds
okay.
to Billy.
All right.
But, I got you again next week, so don't you hesitate. Because I got you
okay,
covered.
Okay, love you, Mary.
I love you. God bless you. Thank you, Reverend. Thank you,
Larry.
Of the Panther Party.
Oh, we got you covered. So, just hanging there. Billy, you got 90 seconds. Tell us what you might want us to know, the world to know.
Okay, I want everybody to go to our website at www.itsabouttime.bpp, as in Black Panther Party. It's about time. BPP.com. Check out the website. There's a world of information there about organizing the history of the struggle, the Black Panther Party. There's music on there. There's John Coltrane on there. There's a lot of information. So check out the website. You owe it to yourself. if you're doing research or you're into history at all, just check it out. Thank you very much for being on your show, and thank Mr. Pink, Reverend Pinkley and Larry
for having
me on the show.
Billy, it's an honor for you. Larry, you got about 20 seconds, so you only hit us with the end of it.
All I want to say is, Comrade Brother Billy, thank you, brother. You were fantastic, as I knew you would be. Stay strong. I'll talk to you soon. Reverend Pinkley, you know I love you, and all power to the people.
All right. Take it easy. Power to the people.
All right. Listen, Billy, we all got to get together soon. That's how we got to do this thing. And Larry, it's an honor.
Thank you, my brother. Love you. Stay strong.
Love you too, man, and take care of yourself.
I will. Right back at you.
All right. Love you. Tell Caroline I say hey. And take care of yourself.
Will do, and the same to Sister Dorothy.
All right, and I think we got one. That's it. We out of here.
That's it.
All right. Talk
goodbye.
To you later.
All right, bro.
Bye.
God bless you all.
Take care now, Mary.
All right.
Bye, Mary.
Bye-bye.